Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. This podcast is being brought to you by the GAS programme, and my name is James Henderson, and I'm Head of GAS Research at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. Just to date stamp this podcast, we're recording it on Friday the 16th of March. And today, we're going to talk about the Indian gas market. And I'm here with a research fellow, colleague of mine, Nitin Zamre, who has recently written a paper called Gas Sector Reforms in India, How Will It Change the Market Outlook?, which was published on the 1st of February. And I highly recommend it to our listeners. But we're going to discuss that paper and other issues around the gas sector in India for the next half an hour or so. So Nitin, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast and discussing what's happening in the Indian gas market with you.
You've had more than 25 years experience in the energy sector in India. You've worked with a wide range of public and private sector clients on energy issues across the entire energy spectrum. But today we're going to focus on gas because obviously the Indian government has some fairly aggressive targets for gas, but that is seen as a sort of within its potential role in the energy transition. So perhaps you could give us some context then around how the Indian government views gas, what the targets are, and how it sits within the energy transition strategy.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, gas is seen by the current government as a tool to diversify its basket of primary energy supplies, which is currently heavily dependent on oil and coal. That's one part. They have set fairly aggressive, targets to reach about 15% of the total primary energy supply using gas by 2030. And while gas is expected to play a role in energy transition, it is expected that it is largely going to be kind of replacing oil rather than, replacing coal, simply because of the economics. So the way government is looking at it, current government is looking at it, is that they want to promote use of gas. And they have to balance both increasing the prices, they're making it attractive for people to produce gas, but at the same time, making sure that the gas is affordable or is actually consumed by the industry. So as a balance of that, what will happen is price-sensitive sectors like power will actually lose out in the growth of gas consumption, whereas the oil-consuming sectors like CGD and other industries, where gas will replace oil products, is where the gas consumption will actually grow.
Okay, that's fascinating. I mean, we'll get into that in a bit more detail. I guess everyone's perception is that, coal to gas switching is the way forward in the transition, but you're saying no, it's oil to gas in India. But let's just talk about the gas sector at the present time. Where is gas most used at the moment?
If you look at the last year's numbers, fertilizer sector consumes about 30% of the gas in India. Second is CGD, which has actually come up very significantly over the last 7-8 years. And the third basically is power, which is at about 15%.
For our listeners, we should probably say CGD is city gas distribution. So that's the sort of networks for residential and small business users. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And in terms of absolute numbers, what sort of are we talking about in terms of overall demand in the Indian gas sector?
So we talk about gas consumption or demand, gas consumption numbers in MMSCMD, which is million standard cubic meters per day. So I think our last year consumption was about 160 MMSCMD.
You talk about the breakdown in the various sectors, and you mentioned the power sector perhaps not being such a sort of prevalent source of demand. Am I right in thinking that there some CCGT gas-fired power stations have been built? I mean, so there is some hope, or is there basically is the power sector being written off as far as gas demand is concerned?
To a large extent, I mean, it'll be very difficult to see power sector being a large consumer of gas going forward, for the simple reason that it's a very price sensitive sector, and the competition that gas has in power sector is the domestic coal, which generates about 75+% of our electricity. And the second is the inroads that have been made by renewable energy at very low prices over the last 10 years. So at this stage, it becomes very difficult to see how gas can actually come in, especially when the gas prices are going up.
Okay, so then talk to us a little bit more about where oil is being used and where gas can compete. I mean, you've mentioned a couple of sectors, but a bit more specifically, where is gas going to potentially displace oil?
Right. So, one, we have the industries which are currently using fuel oil, I mean, furnace oil or LPG or other, you know, oil products for basically heating purposes or in their furnaces. That's where gas can come in and replace. The second, which is a usage that is growing very fast, is basically using it for replacing the petrol and diesel in the form of CNG in the urban areas. And that is being driven by a few factors. Economics is one big reason for that, because petrol and diesel, of course, are very expensive. Second is, there are cities like Delhi where by mandate, public transport is not allowed to be run on diesel. So the taxis and the public buses in Delhi cannot run on diesel. They have to necessarily run on CNG. So because of that, CNG is becoming a big kind of usage that is replacing oil in transport.
And what about the city gas distribution network? I mean, obviously, the use of gas for transport is within that. But are there any other domestic uses of gas? I mean, what's happening with the domestic distribution system?
Yes. So the other thing that is picking up over the last 6-7 years is that LPG is being actually moved out of cities. That's one of the objectives of developing these city gas distribution networks. And that LPG is being made available for, you know, areas where the, you know, commercial fuel has still not reached. And that's primarily subsidized. So in the urban areas, city gas distribution networks are expected to provide piped natural gas and replace the LPG consumption in the cities.
Okay, now you mentioned prices being a difficult balance to find. On the one hand, you've got the desire to produce more gas indigenously within India. And on the other hand, of course, you've got to incentivize increased demand. Let's just talk about how gas is priced domestically in India at the moment and what reforms have taken place over the past few years.
Yeah, so in India till 2012 or 2010 to 2012, till that point in time, the prices of natural gas used to be notified by government. So they used to just notify that this is the, you know, price of gas. But the under the new exploration policy, they allowed the producers to actually discover the price of gas in the market, and then, you know, they would go and approve the price. So the first discovery of that price was done by the KG-D6 basin gas. And subsequently in 2014, they converted that price of gas through a notified formula. So what it means is that all the domestic gas that has been produced before 2014 comes under the formula-driven prices. And this is a weighted average of weighted by volume, weighted average price of upstream prices that people will get in US, so Henry Hub, NBP, Alberta prices in Russia, as a weighted average of that is what the prices domestic producers get in India. Subsequently, what they have done is they have increased the prices, or they have allowed prices to be discovered. So one is the notified prices. The second is they have allowed the difficult fields, which are high temperature, high pressure, or deep water or ultra deep water, they have been allowed to allowed to discover the prices which are higher than the other price that I just talked about. And that price has a ceiling, but that is much higher, than what we see as the notified price or formula-driven price. So that's the second one. And now they have come up with a third category of prices, where for discovered small fields, and CBM is coal-bed methane, there is no ceiling. The producers can just go to the market, discover the price through auctioning of that gas, and can charge the same price to the buyers without any intervention from the government.
And so is this the gas exchange that has developed? Is that what we're talking about now?
No, gas exchange is one mechanism where you can discover price. So if I'm a producer of gas, I discover gas in certain area, I go on the exchange and I carry out an auction for a certain volume of gas, you know, whatever my production is going to be. That discovers at what price I can sell that gas, right? That is one part. Gas exchange also has the main purpose of gas exchange, or function of gas exchange, is actually to allow for trades which are day ahead or, you know, or week ahead or monthly trades, right? For based on certain standard contracts.
Okay, so in terms of the actual price that we've seen then over the last 12 months, obviously in Europe, and we've seen very, very high prices. The LNG market has seen prices, you know, as high as, I don't know, $90 an MMBTU. We're down now at about sort of $13 to $15 an MMBTU. What has happened to the price in India?
So in India, the domestic gas price, the formula-driven domestic gas price, has actually gone up to about, I think it's now at about $11 per MMBTU, because it's a weighted average price. Whereas the price that is being discovered in the market on the exchange and, you know, other platforms, that price has actually gone up to as high as about $22-$23 per MMBTU. So in line with what we are seeing in the global market, the prices have gone up significantly.
And what price is being paid for imported LNG? Presumably the global market price or lower than that?
So while we are not paying the spot prices, because what you are referring to the prices, which are primarily spot prices, India has long-term contracts and our spot consumption is much lower. So the long-term contracts are basically linked to crude oil and, with a slope of about 13%. So the prices haven't risen in the long-term contracts as high as the spot LNG prices. But there have been some cargoes that have been actually purchased in India at fairly high prices as well. But I don't think we have purchased a cargo which has a price of more than $30 per MMBTU.
Okay, so prices have risen then and now sound like they're at quite reasonable levels. You know, some of the reforms were driven by that desire to increase domestic production. Has this worked? I mean, what's the impact of these higher prices been on domestic gas supply and what's the outlook from here?
Yeah, so while we don't have too many data points, there's one data point where there has been about 20% increase in the domestic production from one single field. It's a deep water field which is operated by Reliance and BP. That has started producing gas, and we believe that that's basically a result of the higher prices that they have been allowed to get in the market. There are others in the line. However, as as you understand, the time it takes for the gas production to come on stream and into the market, the lead time is much longer. It usually takes 7-8 years for all of these things to come in place and getting the gas physically into the market. So there are others who are in the pipeline and they will start, actually coming on stream in a few years' time. Reliance, BP share itself will go up significantly from what they're producing right now. So there are indications that these pricing reforms seem to have worked. However, we lost 2 years because of COVID and there were also some other issues with respect to the clearances and other stuff. So therefore, the progress on physical development of these fields hasn't been as good. But those where these issues had been resolved, they have actually started showing promise. Coal bed methane is another source that has actually started producing much more at higher price regimes.
Outlook for production then reasonably good, although delayed by COVID. What about the demand side? India is always seen as a very, very price sensitive market. Prices have obviously gone up significantly, even though they're not at ridiculously high levels. They've gone up a lot in the last 12 months or so. What's that done to current demand, but also the future prospects for demand as customers consider what energy sources they want to use?
So, one thing that we have very clearly seen is a change in the consumption pattern. If you look at the major consumers of gas in India, they more than 70% of the consumption always used to come from fertilizer plus power. In fact, it used to be as high as 80%. Power at these high prices have simply, they almost stopped using natural gas. The fertilizer demand is inelastic because it is a very strategic input for the agricultural produce and therefore, it has to keep buying gas at whatever price. So their consumption remains at about 30%, 35%. And CGD, which used to be a very small player, small consumer of the overall gas, has made significant strides because they can consume, they are consuming gas even at higher prices because they're replacing oil. So as long as you keep getting gas at prices to replace oil, competitive with oil products, gas will be consumed in India. Whereas you have competition from coal or renewable, then it is unlikely that gas will actually compete at these prices that we are seeing.
Okay, and the other point that many people have always looked at, in particularly in terms of the fertilizer sector, is subsidies. So how has the government's subsidy strategy been developing? Can it afford? I mean, if production's rebounding but demand's rising faster, presumably more LNG is going to come into the market. I mean, can the government afford to continue offering subsidies? And if not, then what happens?
Yeah, so I think government is trying to do many things to reduce the subsidy. One is, you know, of course, trying to stop the leakage of subsidy that happens in the system. That is, you know, by moving to digital means of transferring subsidies to the consumers. That is one. The second is they are also trying to wean away the farmers from excessive use of urea, which is where gas gets consumed. And they are also trying to replace that with other fertilizers where the gas consumption will reduce. But that's a long-term game and, you know, you will not see the impact of that very soon.
Okay. You also mentioned gas taxes in your paper. How important are they and what's their impact been?
They are significant when it comes to usage of gas, because what happens is, unlike other commodities, most of the consumption in India has come under the regime of GST. And therefore, there's a uniform taxation all across India on most of the products. But natural gas is still not in that list for various reasons. So what happens is, there are two things that happen. One is that you tax gas at 4% in one state and at 25% in another state. So this leads to a lot of anomalies in terms of, you know, the consumption pattern and where, the industries could be situated for consuming the gas. That is one. The second is that while coal is taxed at 4%, natural gas, as I said, gets taxed anywhere between 4% to 26% or 25%. So it doesn't get any benefit of being a cleaner fuel than coal to that extent. So these are anomalies that still exist, and there is an effort going on to, you know, remove these anomalies.
So to be clear, then, there's absolutely no carbon tax which advantages gas over coal.
There is a tax on coal. So there is a cess on coal, which is about, I think, 400 rupees per ton, which is, say, about $5 of carbon tax. That's too little or too low for gas to benefit.
An economic challenge, then, when competing with coal or renewables, opportunity to replace oil in various sectors. The other sort of physical constraint that's always been seen about in India is infrastructure. So given the uncertain outlook for demand, is the government encouraging construction of pipelines and import terminals, and how's that happening?
So import terminals are completely what we call, they are under open license, which means anybody can build based on demand supply, LNG import terminals. Whereas for pipelines, our current pipeline system, in whatever shape it is, the utilization is fairly low. So there are no more pipelines that are coming up. Again, it's a fairly open, scenario where based on demand supply mismatch or need for capacity, people can, you know, just go to the regulator and bid for setting up the pipeline. But CGD is an area where we are actually seeing huge push. So there are about 200 new urban areas that have been awarded to various developers to set up CGD network in those areas. And all that happened, I think, over the last 3 years, 3 or 4 years. So that's one area where we are seeing a lot of emphasis on creating infrastructure. And I think that's something that will keep on, connecting the consumers with the supply sources.
And you mentioned CNG in the transport sector as a big area of potential, you know, replacement of petrol and diesel. What's the infrastructure like there? I mean, how easy is it to basically convert a car to CNG? And also, once you've done that, to then purchase CNG at a resale station?
Yeah, so I think in established cities like Mumbai, Delhi, and there are, I think, about 20 cities where the gas CGD infrastructure has been there for more than 15 years. So in these cities, it's a fairly well-developed ecosystem that has happened. Initially, government had incentivized conversion of diesel vehicles, especially into CNG vehicles. So they had, provided some incentives and also promoted the use of CNG. Now, I think people are fairly well familiar. There are kits. You can buy a new vehicle with CNG, you know, system installed in it. So it's a fairly well-known and well-accepted kind of fuel for vehicles, especially passenger vehicles. And availability of CNG, again, in established cities is very well set up. Even in new cities, what the infrastructure developers are doing is that they're actually setting up CNG stations first before they can start developing the overall network. So the availability of CNG in all these areas comes up first. And because it is an accepted and very, very well understood, technology for passenger cars, I think there are not many challenges in actually setting it up.
Okay, so we've got a situation then where we've got this balance between, demand, particularly in CGD and CNG and potentially in industry and fertilizers growing. We've got an incentive to increase supply. Where's the balance? Where does the Indian government see the balance? Is demand ultimately going to get driven by supply availability, or are the two separate because LNG imports are going to play a major role? What's the key drivers here of future demand growth?
Going by the approach of the government, I think it will be the market forces that will play. So there's not going to be much intervention I don't expect much intervention from the government side, to promote use of gas. So again, as I started talking about where gas will be used, it is likely that it will be used in replacing oil simply because that's where LNG. See, for some time to come, right now we have 50% of our supplies coming from LNG and 50% from our domestic supplies. So till that balance changes significantly, we will continue to be driven by this whole, international or global LNG prices scenario. So in that situation, we believe that the consumption will be driven by replacement of oil and not so much in. So the market will find its balance primarily based on the prices.
And so then looking out with this competition with oil, is the potential still there for the 15% target to be met? I mean, do you think that India's on target, on sort of track for that? I could compare that with the target for renewables, which with the pace of growth in renewables seems to be remarkable. How would you position gas relative to the growth in renewables, for example?
So, again, given the current situation, the global situation, it looks highly unlikely that we will reach that number of 15% by 2030. There have been some studies that have been carried out, which we reviewed while I was writing this paper. They indicate that even in a low gas price scenario, we could reach a percentage of about 15% only by 2040, not before that. And if there is an introduction of carbon tax in India, and there are specific targets for reduction of carbon emission, then gas will actually lose out further. So even in low gas prices, it will get pushed further because then it loses out to renewable energy, very significantly. So 15% by 2030 looks very highly unlikely. If it's a low gas price scenario, we will see maybe by 2040, it will reach about 15%.
But you sound reasonably confident that demand will continue to grow. One of my questions was whether gas could just miss out altogether. If we don't, by a certain period, we start to worry about emissions, we start to worry about carbon taxes, and maybe you just, there's an immediate coal to renewable switch and mass electrification. Is that a risk for gas, or do you see this a fundamental niche for gas out for the next 20 or 30 years in India?
A very interesting question. I don't know whether I have the crystal ball to see what will happen, but I think this is a very likely possibility, given the way things have happened in India. Because see, even in transport, even in CNG, moving to electric vehicles is a very, very likely possibility in the next 10 years, which means the demand from CGD could also go down for natural gas. So it is quite possible. I mean, gas lost out to coal in India earlier, and it is at a stage where it could lose out to renewable energy going forward. So it may not. The only way in which I think it can make a dent in the energy basket, a significant share of the energy basket, is if we really find some really big domestic gas, and that really floods the market with lower prices and with all the benefits of energy security and all of that. If that happens, I think we could see gas penetrating to a much larger level. Otherwise, based on imported gas, I think it's unlikely that it will make a big share of the Indian domestic gas market.
I think many people are interested to know, is there a price level at which, you know, you could sort of say Indian gas demand is, you know, at risk or not at risk? I mean, many people sort of look at $10 an MMBTU and think, well, above that, then India's going to pull back demand. Below that, do you have a view on a price level which can incentivize demand and one which disincentivizes demand? Or is it all sort of about being relative to oil?
I think it's all about being related to oil. And why I say that is, I remember when our first LNG terminal was being set up in India, we had a fixed price of about, I think, $3 per MMBTU. And it was felt that anything beyond $3 is something that India will not be able to afford as a gas price. And today we are merrily buying, even domestic gas at more than $10 per MMBTU. So I think it's all about what level gas finds competing with other fuels, because, it's basically substituting existing fuels in India or any existing market, right? It's not going to find any new usage for itself. So it will always compete with existing energy sources. And I think for all the reasons that we talked about, oil is where it will really be able to compete well. It will not be able to compete with renewable or coal. So it all depends on what is the oil price in the international market. And based on that, natural gas will really find its, price level in the Indian market. So it will continue to, be consumed based on whatever is the price level that oil is able to give.
Okay, listen, well, look, thank you very much indeed for your insights. I'd recommend again your paper to our listeners called Gas Sector Reforms in India, How Will It Change the Market Outlook? Published on the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies website. So please do go and look there for that paper and for our other research on India and indeed the whole global gas market. But for the time being, again, thank you, Nitin, for your insights. It's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Please look after yourselves and stay healthy, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.